Pete's Golf. Since 1979, Pete's Golf has been practicing the art of club fitting and has been selected as a top 100 club fitter by Golf Digest magazine. At Pete's Golf, we use the best technology available to create an exceptional fitting experience for every customer that walks into our store. Visit petesgolf.com or call 516-248-6891. That's 516-248-6891 and get your next set of clubs fit for you.
Golf course superintendents are the unsung heroes of our great game. Due to the game's efforts, we now have turf that needs less water, courses that are more sustainable, with many now offering natural wildlife habitats. From the days of old Tom Morris, golf course superintendents have given golfers a reason to love this great game. But don't take my word for it. Jack Nicholas agrees.
If you love golf like I do, thank a golf course superintendent.
A message from the Golf Course Superintendents Association of America and local superintendents everywhere.
Hey everyone, this is Chris Fochelle with Mizuno. There's no better feeling than having your clubs perfectly dialed in, and with over 2,000 authorized performance fitting partners nationwide, it couldn't be any easier to get custom fit using Mizuno's revolutionary Shaft Optimizer 3D. Find the right shaft and match it with any of our legendary grain flow forgings or our award-winning hot metal irons featuring high-strength chromoly. Visit MizunoGolf.com to find the nearest authorized fitter in your area, and remember, nothing feels like a Mizuno.
All right, welcome back to On Par with Anthony Scorsia. Pleased to be joined by the Director of Instruction at Harbor Links, James Hong. James, how are you doing this morning?
Anthony, how are you? It's nice to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's great to have you back on the show. Interested in what you have to say. I'm sure it's been an interesting year. But for those who are listening, James is not only the Director of Instruction at Harbor Links, but he has acquired a number of awards and credentials, Golf Digest Top Teacher in New York, Top 50 Teacher in America, U.S. Kids Top 50 Master's Teacher, U.S. Kids Top 50 Teacher, Certified in Aimpoint, Titleist, U.S. Kids, 4D, K-Vest, 3D biomechanics, so quite a list of accomplishments and credentials. That's one of the reasons why I enjoy talking to you, because you're a person who obviously stays up on their craft, cares about what they're doing, and understands the importance of continuing their education in their craft and how that important that is in being the professional that you are. Have you always had that sort of thirst for knowledge?
Yeah, it's just one of those things. I think the way I work, it's just I can't stand still. I've always had this paranoia about not getting better. It just makes it get worse. So
right.
Yeah, it's always been there.
Yeah, I mean, and golf is sort of like a lot of education in general. It's sort of like it's always an evolving discipline, and there's always new things to learn, and we're always, more importantly, always learning new things about how learning occurs. Do you find that?
Oh, absolutely, without a doubt. It's like I can think of so many things that I used to tell people to do that I just cringe when I recall it.
Right. Right, but that's not necessarily, a fault as much as it is a credit to you learning and understanding and evolving and sort of, trying to stay on top of what the best practices and the norms are at the time. But I understand what you're saying, but things change and things evolve.
Yeah, and it's also the other way, too. It's like there are things that I used to say way back, like 15, 20 years ago, that I'm like, oh, wow, that still works today. So, yeah, definitely both ways of looking at it.
Yeah, absolutely. Just curious, from a let's say from 30,000 feet, what's life as someone who's been an I want to dare I say expert. I mean, I know you probably take you may even cringe at that term, but someone who is sort of more on the prolific in their field, especially with young golfers. Although I'm sure you teach golfers of all age, you've certainly made your niche in the youth golf. Area and subject. I'm just curious what life has been like for the last 14 months, given the pandemic. Life has been like for you?
Yeah, it's been kind of a surreal experience. Some days it feels like it was 14 months. Other days it feels like it was 5 years ago. So
right.
The first part of it was, it was difficult as it was for a lot of people. I mean, I just suddenly went all virtual with my instruction. I kept in touch with all of my students, and we did everything online through Zoom meetings and FaceTiming, and that actually turned out to be a lot of fun. It was very educational. Mm-hmm. Helped me understand how much better I could be at communicating things. So that was an amazing experience. I was very happy to work with the kids that way and keep them in touch. It's like, and it was nice to hear from some of the parents saying how that really kind of helped the kids get through some of the issues they were dealing with, getting stuck at home and not being able to see their friends, whatnot. So that was good. And then about the end of June, we suddenly were able to teach again. And so it was just sort of an explosion from that point forward. The place was just overrun for our summer camps. That was a wonderful thing to see. And we made a concerted effort, we meaning our staff here, not just me, it's to make a concerted effort to not only have the kids feel like they had a place they could come and have some fun, but make the parents feel at ease that they're sending their kids somewhere where they'd be safe for a few hours over the summer and enjoy themselves. So that was really good. And now it's a year later, and the urge is still there. We are just so busy right now, and it's kind of nice to see some form of normalcy, so to speak, here again. And so that's really good to see.
You mentioned that you felt through Zoom, which was an interesting shift for everybody in education and in, obviously in your discipline, made you a better communicator. In what ways?
Well, I think both verbally and visually. One thing I noticed when I would see myself on Zoom is basically what my mannerisms were, what my facial expressions were. And it made me suddenly realize why I would see certain expressions from my students, like, oh, he's not happy with how I'm doing. And really, I was just kind of just standing there and just watching them. And I would realize that I would have this kind of like angry look on my face.
A resting angry face, shall we say?
Yeah, and I'm like, oh my God, this must be what everyone is seeing when I'm giving a lesson. And so just being aware of things like that and communication, simplifying your words or having better ways of explaining things. And I think also what it helped me do was how to be faster on my feet in terms of coming up with ideas and concepts for students to try out.
It's an interesting topic, right? Words matter in how you express yourself and certainly body language. I think one of the best things teachers can do, students can do, is obviously reflect, right? So when you reflect on the things that you've done in the past, I think it makes your path to improvement much more efficient. You probably never thought about your not just your words, but you were sort of stuck looking at yourself on Zoom. You probably never even thought about your expression of your face, your body language. You know, we talk about how the golf swing, people, you know, every day is a little different. Your body chemistry is different. It goes to the same for teachers, right?
Oh, absolutely. It's like one of the things like I mentioned about my facial expression. So just being a little bit more, I guess the best word to use is playful during the lesson.
Mm-hmm.
It's what was funny about it is when we went back to live in-person lessons, initially I felt like I was being silly and clownish, but I realized that no, actually I was just being, I guess, being more normal, so to speak. And I didn't realize that what a persona I must have had in front of all of these people in the past. It's like, wow, not that I was gloomy, but just, boy, he's just not happy with what I'm doing. I must be doing something wrong.
Right.
And for juniors especially, were they scared of me in some sense? Is that like, oh, the teacher's not mad? So that's definitely something I actually talk to the kids about now. It's like when they kind of look a little scared, if I ask them a question and they go, well, what's he want me to say? What's the right answer? I make sure they understand I'm not looking for the right answer. I just want to know what you're thinking. So don't be afraid of saying anything that comes to your mind. And I think the kids really appreciate that.
Sure. How did that, in some levels, showing that you're not perfect and the fact that, you know, there are things that you're learning about yourself even through this difficult time, how did that change the nature of your relationship as they saw you being honest with them and saying and expressing that sort of getting to understand your own self?
Yeah, I think as a result, the kids they realize that they can be honest with me, but also it kind of has this domino effect where when they're hitting golf balls, for example, they're not afraid of making a mistake anymore. I'm always asking them, so what do you think about that? What do you think you did well? If you had to do that over again, if I gave you another ball, what do you think you would do to make it better? And they're much more exploratory in their answers, much more thoughtful, instead of just kind of almost looking for the app on a phone or an iPad that solves the issues. So that, sure. That's very helpful.
Absolutely. What were you finding yourself doing in terms of when you get stuck and confined to just Zoom? How did your, obviously we just talked about a little bit, on a personal level, how your teaching changed, but how did instruction change in general for you when you go to just a virtual experience?
Well, what I noticed that I got a lot better at was compartmentalizing what it was that I was teaching. And when you hear it from good teachers, they always talk about how the focus should just be on one or two things in the lesson so that you can really make sure the student understands. And I found that sometimes I would jump around a lot in the lessons, and I didn't even realize I was doing it. So what those Zoom meetings made me do was, hey, you better stay focused on one or two topics, because on the screen, you just look really jumbled if you don't have that in place. And so it also made me more thoughtful in terms of planning what I was going to do within the groups, within the lessons beforehand.
There's a fine line, right, between being creative and being able to be exploratory, but also staying focused and on topic, wouldn't you say?
Oh, absolutely. That's what I meant earlier. It's like, yeah. I felt that it really kind of tagged into my creative juices in the sense that you have to walk that fine line. You better be prepared, but at the same time, be also prepared for being unprepared.
Yeah, right. No, I mean, that's the nature of teaching. I mean, it's a sort of... an interesting dance with students when you're dealing with topics that might be a teachable moment. It might be worth exploring and indulging in, but you have to be careful that you're also not losing sight of the primary focus of the day's task or the primary deficiency of the student you might be trying to address.
Exactly. It's like you interviewing somebody like me. It's like if I suddenly say something and that kind of sparks you going, hey, let's delve a little bit more into that topic. You're always aware of those opportunities.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's basically what I like to do, right? I mean, there's an initial sort of scaffolding of questions, but then pretty much I just ignore the paper and just listen to what you're saying. And I think that's basically what makes a good teacher, right? Because you're not focused on, I mean, you loosely know where you want to go, but you can't just be married to the script per se. You have to be listening to or watching, in your case, what the kid is doing and what the kid is saying, because that's just as important as to what you're trying to do.
Exactly.
And you said that, there's been you mentioned about how the parents were so grateful that the kids were at least had an avenue to, let's say, escape the doldrums that was the pandemic in terms of being the lockdown. Did you find yourself being sort of junior psychologist? I know you're not a psychologist. I know you weren't sort of trying to diagnose your students. I'm just saying we all are junior psychologists on some level, whether you're an educator or a teacher in your case. But how important was that part of, and did you do any sort of research on the effects the pandemic was having on kids as they were confined to their houses?
Yes, I was looking into a couple of things, and I had a couple of friends that kind of directed me towards a couple of articles and videos to take a look at. And I think the other thing that was very helpful was the fact that both of my sons, they're teenagers, and so their schools were having sort of PTA-style meetings for the parents on how to prepare us for what was going on. And when I would join those meetings, I thought those were very interesting, very informative, and so that kind of got me thinking I should be doing the same thing for these kids as well, and I would just turn around and take some of those same links and send them to the parents of my juniors. and they were very appreciative of that. I would have Zoom meetings with the parents as well, just talking to them. And I think they saw that I was a parent just like they were, and just trying to help each other out and how to help our kids deal with these issues that they were having. And with the kids themselves, I would talk to them during the lessons, and I would always start off the lessons, the group programs, with, hey, how's everything going? How have things been? Everyone doing well? Have you been talking to anyone lately? Anything fun happened to you while you were at home? Stuff like that. And we would just chat. And sometimes what I would do is I would be the first one to talk. I would say, hey, you know what happened to me today? This was going on and stuff like that. And if I was feeling down, I would tell them that I was feeling down, just to open myself up and show them, hey, they can do the same thing with me. And I think it was good to hear some of the things that the kids were saying, what they were dealing with. And I think they liked it. And I told the parents I would do this as well, because you know how kids are. Sometimes they don't want to tell their parents quite yet.
Sure.
But they'll tell another adult. And then sometimes the kids would tell me something, and I would say, is it all right if I talk to your parents about this? And I would let them know. It's like, if you don't want me to talk to your parents, that's fine. I won't. But I would also tell them, that's something, believe me, your mom and dad will want to hear from you. So don't be afraid of talking to them. And I got a few messages from parents as well, saying they really appreciated that as well.
Did you find that kids were really quiet in the beginning when it came to Zoom and not wanting to open up, and or were they expressive right away, or did it take some time?
Oh yeah, it depended on the individual. Like there was a couple of kids, one boy in particular, Patrick. He was just his normal self on video, and he was talkative and stuff, and we would joke around. And others, you could see, you kind of needed to pull them out of their shell a little bit. But once they realized that, hey, this is something that they could use to kind of let themselves go, then everyone seemed to be all right after a couple of weeks.
Do you feel like this sort of this experience enhanced or made you or shift your focus a little bit on the importance of the psychological aspects of your profession?
Oh, absolutely. I'm much more aware of that now. Everything from just how people are learning, how they're developing, how some things you just need to be more patient. And I think what also that translates into is talking to the parents about their own kids and letting them know it's okay if this takes a little while. That you have to realize that, like, taking a half hour or 1 hour lesson is not going to solve the 33 issues they might be going through on the golf course or whatnot
sure.
on that particular day. So just let it evolve. And that's what happens with us, both teachers and parents, is that we see where the child is now and we see where potentially they could be, and we try to bridge that gap in 15 minutes, and it's just not going to happen.
Yeah, I don't think, adults, maybe sometimes parents, understand that when you're dealing with young students, young adults, cognitive development is an important thing to understand, that in the sense that there are things that kids can't understand conceptually just based on the fact that of their age. Their brain is not developed enough to understand maybe some of the concepts that you're trying to explain or the way you're trying to explain it, which sort of throws back to how important words matter. But I think parents parents don't understand that there are things cognitively that are happening and developing in a young kid's brain that prevents them from understanding certain things.
Yeah, that you're absolutely 100% right. And one of the things that I've done more since everything started is that we've been doing a lot more sort of like bad shot lessons, meaning purposely hitting bad shots or purposely doing things wrong. And that seems to help a lot, because it's like, now you're not, we always try to teach people to hit the ball perfect.
Right.
Or to be like, or to look like Rory McIlroy or something like that. And it's like, sometimes what I've been doing the complete opposite. I find that the kids are learning as much, if not more, from that. Like, we do this one thing where we're on the golf course. It's like, the rule is, you're not allowed to hit the fairway.
Right.
You're not allowed to hit the fairway in a tee shot. You're not allowed to hit the green on a par three on your tee shot. If you do, it's a two-shot penalty. And it kind of has a reverse effect on them, where they start to realize, like, yeah, it's actually hard not to hit the fairway.
That's awesome.
And it's like, yeah.
That's a, sort of an interesting, on two levels, right? It's an interesting teaching tactic, but it's also a very interesting form of reverse psychology.
Exactly. It's like, I have one boy where he aimed at the right side fairway bunker and he hit his drive right into the bunker and he's upset. And I'm like, what are you upset about? He's like, oh, I hit in the bunker. And I looked at him like, what's the rule?
Right.
You're not supposed to hit the fairway. He's like, yeah. And I said, well, where were you aiming? He's like, hey, in the bunker. Where'd your ball go? In the bunker.
Right.
And I'm looking at him, and I've known the kid for a while, so I'm smiling, going like, use your brain.
Right.
You can see the light bulb go on. He goes, oh.
Yeah, right, right.
I get it now.
Those are great moments, though.
Yeah, he's like, you're pretty accurate there. You hit where you're aiming.
Right, right. Hey, buddy, isn't that the goal of golf?
You know, yeah, exactly.
Right. That's an awesome example, and I love that strategy. How did you come to think that's sort of outside the box thinking? Where do you come up with these things?
I just kind of listening to other instructors, learning, just like we were talking about at the beginning. It's like taking things and it's just like I'm a student of other teachers as well, where I hear other people talk about try to be creative with what you're doing. Don't always think about trying to make things perfect and make it more interesting and challenging. So that's where something like that came from, because some of the kids, they play in tournaments and they tell me about, oh, they're afraid of missing the fairway or they're afraid of doing this. And so I call it like, well, it's the monster in the closet. Let's open the closet door and see if there's really a monster inside.
Right.
So we do that, and it's like, yeah, see, it's like you hit it into the rough, but did you recover? Did you save par? Or did you, like, at least the worst thing you did was make a bogey and you minimalize the damage? Yeah, it wasn't so bad after all. See, so the monster's not as bad as you thought it was.
Right, right. It's actually an interesting way also maybe to talk about core strategy, right? So let's say your job is, let's say your goal is to miss the fairway, but now let's see how do we recover from this. And sort of, because kids are, like you said, you know, they don't really, if they're trying to hit the fairway, and then if you're like, well, you were in the rough, and now you're talking theoretical, and they don't really care about theoretical per se, and they're not going to imagine they're over there in the rough, but now they're in the rough, or they're in the fairway bunker, and how are they going to get up and down? And so it sort of forces that sort of line of thinking as well.
Yeah, absolutely. It's like I always joke around with all the kids here that play in tournaments. They said, if I was your caddy, you guys would be shooting 7 under par.
Right.
And you wouldn't even realize it, because we'd be too busy laughing over every shot. And it's just trying to get them to realize that stop putting the pressure, the weight of the world on your shoulders over this one shot out of the rough.
Right.
It's okay if you mess up.
Exactly. What are you working on now? What do you got going on now? You said that the passion, the numbers, however you want to quantify it, is there. Continued since people found this new... finding it, some people reuniting with it, the sport of golf. What are you working on now? What's going on now with you?
Well, like what we started doing a lot more of this year than in the past was more beginner adult golf school.
Mm-hmm.
And those have been filling up. We have 4 in place right now. They're all filled up. I'm going to schedule some more for our staff. They've been a blast. And the golfers, the... You know, same thing. I'm literally treating it like it's a junior program, and it's nice to see the adults laughing and kind of being a little childish with what they're doing, how they're talking and stuff. And with the juniors, our camps they're basically, our spring camps are all filled, our summer camps are all filled. So I'm already setting up for the fall programs, and I'm pretty sure that'll be filled up once that opens up for registration. And so now, basically what I'm focusing more on right now is what I'm going to be doing with my juniors over the summer, what kind of programs I'm going to put together for the ones that are sort of like the tournament juniors, so to speak, the serious ones.
Sure.
And making it more enjoyable for them, because whatever we did last year, I just want to make it better for them this year.
Do you have a fair amount? How would you break down the percentage in terms of like your sort of tournament amateurs or your tournament ready kids versus the recreational kids?
I'd say like our staff probably has about 25 to 30 kids that you could say play in anything from like U.S. kids golf tournaments to AJGA, IJGT tournaments, hurricane tournaments, anything like that. So And, you know, we get a lot of kids who are like 7 years old, 6 years old, 8 years old that are playing in U.S. Kids Golf tournaments. So we're just kind of like having fun with them and letting them realize that you should be happy about being on the golf course. There's a lot of people that were stuck at home for a long period of time. And so just have fun with it. Don't worry if you're messing up on the golf course. Just figure it out, learn from it, and come back. And, you know, I have a couple of girls that I teach that are kind of going through this period of, oh, I'm so bad on the golf course. And I'm telling them, you know what, in about 3 months from now, you're going to look back on these moments and go, yeah, why was that so hard? That's not so hard at all. You just need experience, that's all.
Yep, and they need to realize they make they're more resilient and more adaptive than they think, and those jumps in their learning and talent happens faster.
I have one girl who was fretting over it, and then I took her out to play three holes, and what I showed her afterwards was, you're playing amazing. You're amazing. You're just aiming a little bit weird, and so you're actually hitting the ball where you're lined up to. And if you just figure that out, you're going to be incredible. And
yep.
She just had this big grin on her face heading back to the car like, oh, I'm not as bad as I thought I was. So that was cool to see.
Well, nothing more, you know, nothing like having a kid smile after a good lesson. And I'm smiling now because this is always a great conversation. It always goes so fast with you, James. I really appreciate you taking the time, but we're out of time. And so thank you very much for everything that you've done.
Anytime, Anthony. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. All right. Take care, James.
You too. Bye-bye.
Bye. All right. That was James Hong, Director of Instruction at Harbor Links. That's it, folks. Appreciate your time. You're listening to On Par with Anthony Scorsia.
Views expressed in the following program do not necessarily represent those of the staff, management, or owners of WGBB.